Howdy, folks. Welcome back to Germ Hat, the only show out there that teaches you how to clean those nasty little bugs and sperms and shrimps off of your favorite hat. You got to get them out of there. And with Thanksgiving just around the corner, this is the perfect time to explore the various ways you can deal with the salmonella, E. coli, listeria, and all of those little invisible bugs and scumwads that jump up off of your improperly handled meat and potatoes into your beautiful holiday hat. And, hold on just a darn second. I'm being told by my producers that I am, once again, not in the right location, and this is not the Germ Hat Show. Son of a gun. I'm beginning to wonder if there even is a Germ Hat Show.
Oh, there's probably room for it out there.
Maybe it's the friends we made along the way.
I don't know. Well, if this isn't Germ Hat, it must be Gem Hunt, our family horror podcast, where we select a movie with less than 5,000 votes on IMDb. We watch the shit out of it, talk about it, and vote on whether it's a gem or a turd. Been quite a few turds around here lately.
Sorry, it's me. I'm turding it up in
here. I turd.
We gotta wade through the turds, though, you know? It's part of the process.
Okay, who we is? My name is Cody, and I got me a nice room at the Men's Welfare Hostel.
I'm Buggy, and this wig takes 20 years off.
I'm Beth, and I lead a shabby lifestyle full of arguments, worries, and affairs.
Indeed. True for all of us, I believe. Well, it's November. October is over. It's done. It's finished. We survived. We're never doing it again.
Not true.
Well, we'll see about that. But spoiler alert, we're going to talk about our favorite October viewing experiences during special time.
Woo!
So stick around for that. But I do have to say, we went to a screening of The Ring at the Hollywood Theater, which we mentioned on our last episode.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very excited because it's been a long time since I'd done seen that son of a bitch. And I came away from it with a hot take. The movie is not great.
It's boring.
Same. No, it's just that green filter shit, man.
Well,
it's boring. Yeah. Oh, are you talking about the like American one?
Yes.
Oh.
It is fun. It's a lot of fun.
It's definitely campy.
Very campy.
But it was queer horror, so it...
Oh, makes it funner.
The show beforehand was really great.
Yes.
I took a tumble.
Well, it happens.
Don't we all?
I thought it was a good movie the last time I saw it.
The big scares are still classic, but I couldn't believe how much of the movie I was like, nothing's really happened for quite
so
a while
your
here.
Is, I just thought it was cheesy, but I remember feeling like it was scary and it did good like atmosphere setting the last time I saw it.
Yeah,
me too.
It was probably at least 15 years, because I think this is the third time I've seen it.
I love whatever that lady's name is who's in it. I love her.
Yeah, she did great.
Amber Tamblyn as a baby. Not a baby, but as like a teenager.
That's like cool actors in it. Yeah. But I feel kind of the same way with that version that I feel with the first version, where I'm like, again, like I will say the first, like the original Japanese version is probably like better.
Ringu is definitely better. But
it also, to me, the same problem I have with the remake is there's just a lot of like nothing's really going on. And that's just how I feel. That's my hot take, though.
Yeah, and I guess you guys, for me, it was more like it was implausible and silly. And anyway.
Is there anything else from October or just life in general that is worth mentioning in our upfront business section?
I am looking at the toilet, which is in the living room currently, along with the sink.
Oh, yes.
That's pretty cool.
This will never end.
Yes, it will end.
Just like all of the misery will never end. But that doesn't matter, because we have a movie to talk about tonight.
Yay.
To distract you from the misery. We'll give you some misery to distract you from your misery. And this is a movie that was selected for our October list, and that was the goal of October for me this year. I put a lot of things that fit our criteria on the list, and I wanted to find one that I wanted to talk about for Gem Hunt after October was finished, just because that's how the timing worked out. And I found one. This is a movie called Schizo from 1976. And I selected it because it fit into the slasher subgenre. And I'm always trying to mix up the subgenres on my list so I don't have too many of one or too few of another, but this made it on as the slasher. This is a film that was directed by Pete Walker, written by David McGillivray and Murray Smith, starring Lynn Frederick as Samantha, John Layton as Alan, Stephanie Beecham as Beth, John Fraser as Leonard, Jack Watson as William Haskin, Queenie Watts as Mrs. Wallace, and Tricia Mortimer as Joy. The music was done by Barry Guy. The composer was uncredited. I'm not sure why. Stanley Myers, the conductor, was also uncredited. I don't know why. Stanley Myers worked with Pete Walker on many of his productions before this and went on to work on a handful of other horror films. The Watcher in the Woods.
Oh, yeah.
The Incubus from 1981. I like that one. Paper House from 1988. I've seen that. I like that one. The Witches from 1990.
Oh, I love that. Witches, yeah.
So he did some stuff. The cinematography was done by Peter Jessup. All of these people that worked on this movie kind of worked with Pete Walker on a lot of his early movies, interestingly enough. He kind of had a crew, it seems. Where can you watch this fucking fuck stain? It's on Canopy. For free, if you have a library card. I don't, because I don't know how to read.
The library.
I do. We do. The ladies have library cards.
I don't have a library card. Every time I walk in there, an alarm goes off, and they're like, you can't come in here. You don't know how to read.
That's not.
And you use the internet for questionable things. It's on Plex. I still don't really know what Plex is, but I think it might be free. It's on Tubi for free. It's on Amazon for the renting. And there are DVD and Blu-rays available. We rented a DVD at Movie Madness. I hear that the Blu-ray, which they did not have at Movie Madness, is the full uncut version of this.
Oh, I wonder
which apparently
what
there was a missing around 2 minutes of this. So maybe some a little bit of sketchy weirdness that we didn't get to see in the version that we watched. Okay, are you guys ready to know what this little turd scum sucker is about?
Oh, please.
All right, here we go. We open with a voiceover narration describing schizophrenia that goes a little something like this.
Schizophrenia, a mental disorder, sometimes known as multiple or split personality, characterized by loss of touch with environment and alternation between violent and contrasting behavior patterns.
If you happen to know anything about mental disorders like schizophrenia, you'll likely pick up on the fact that this opening description isn't entirely accurate. But that don't fucking matter. After some establishing shots of industrial England, we begin following a grizzled man in a red stocking cap. At one point, the man picks up a newspaper and notices an article titled "Ice Queen to Wed." Shortly after, we are introduced to Samantha, a professional ice skater. Aha! This must be the infamous Ice Queen. It becomes obvious quite quickly that the man in the red hat has some sort of obsession or fascination with Samantha, and he has seen packing a bag with some nefarious objects like black gloves, a big-ass knife, and what appears to be a bloody piece of broken glass. So it appears we have a dangerous stalker on our hands, emphasized by the red hat man furiously drawing circles around Samantha's face. The film then introduces some key characters like Samantha's friend Beth, a psychiatrist named Leonard, and Samantha's fiancé Alan. Samantha and Alan are to be married any day now, but we discover that Alan is postponing the honeymoon for 2 weeks because he's afraid to leave the carpet factory he's in charge of unattended. No one munches any carpet in this film.
Oh, I know. I was waiting for it.
The man in the red hat arrives in London, and Samantha begins receiving creepy phone calls. On the day of the wedding, Samantha sees the man lurking around and begins to suspect he's following her. And through some grimy, exploitation-esque flashback sequences, we start to get the sense that maybe this man is someone from her past. Despite Samantha's assertions that she's being stalked by a dangerous creep, her now husband and friends don't necessarily believe her. However, when people start dying, some in notably gruesome ways, and Samantha explains that her stalker is a man named William Haskin, the same man that murdered her mother when she was just a child, her friends agree to help her track down this Haskin fellow. Along the way, we're introduced to some sleazy behavior from the men in Samantha's life, possibly hanky-panky between Alan and Beth, a variety of red herrings, and of course, a psychic society that attempts to bring Samantha into the fold and introduces her to a medium that may or may not have actual supernatural powers. Is William Haskin as dangerous as he's made out to be? Or is there another explanation for all the carnage that unfolds throughout the film? Does that capture everything?
I think so.
Do I need to retire from life?
No.
No. No. What the fuck, Sleepy Beaver?
Okay. Well, with all that said, let's talk about some of this shit. And first up, let's begin by talking about Pete Walker. A somewhat infamous independent producer and director from England, I saw one writer refer to him as a British sleaze merchant, mm-hmm. which I found amusing. I read an article on kgfilms.com titled Pete Walker, Master of British Exploitation, that delves into his film history, and I learned that he got his start as a successful producer of sexploitation shorts. But he decided to transition into making horror films and thrillers purely because those genres were more commercially successful. That seems to be a path that a lot of these genre filmmakers take during this era. John Rolin, I'm looking at you. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't very familiar with the work of Pete Walker, but then I realized that I actually have seen some of his films. And here's just a brief selection of some of his work. Die Screaming Marianne from 1971, The Flesh and Blood Show from 1972, House of Whipcord from 1974, which was referenced a lot in my research, so we might have to watch that one.
Mm-hmm.
Frightmare, 1974. We've seen this one.
Yeah, I was like, that one sounds familiar.
Yeah, there's an old woman who eats brains and kills people, at least awesome. One person with a drill.
Okay.
Yeah. Obviously, we have Schizo from 1976. The Comeback from 1978, which I think we've watched. There's like a singer who is trying to make a comeback, but then his dead wife's ghost is there, and he's a real piece of shit. And
That sounds familiar.
I kind of don't remember a lot about it, but I think we've seen it. And his last film from 1983, House of Long Shadows, starred some really heavy hitters, including Vincent Price, Peter Cushing, Christopher Lee, and John Carradine, who all acted in scenes together. John Carradine did not kill himself by autoerotic asphyxiation.
That was his brother.
That was David Carradine.
Oh.
Brother.
Okay, here we go. So Pete Walker at some point just said, fuck it, and got into real estate or some shit. But enough of the history lesson here. Here's the discussion topic. Sorry, I'm blabbering. Here's a little setup. In a review of Schizo by Ian Taylor, writing for We Belong Dead, he notes that Walker's previous horror hits were promoted by scandalously targeting some British institution or another. Frightmare took pieces out of Family, actually quite literally, with a power drill. House of Whipcord was a dig at the judicial system, and House of Mortal Sin really dragged the Catholic Church through the gutter. So, in other words, it was really sticking it to the system.
Mm-hmm.
And these films were all written by David McGillivray as well, by the way. But the author goes on to say, Schizo lacked an institution to attack, except maybe it could be read as anti-celebrity culture, which was kind of what they were targeting in The Comeback, but not really. With that angle in mind, did anything jump out to you thematically from this film that would align with Walker's previous trend of attacking some kind of institution? Or do you think the author's correct in his assertion that this movie didn't really have a clear target, but if there was, what do you think it is?
Marriage.
I think this is an attack on marriage.
No, but that's...
Unintentionally, for sure.
That's fascinating.
I read, too, that most of his films were about authority figures punishing nonconformists, and the nonconformists were usually women. But then when he was asked about it, he was like, no, I'm just making movies. So he's like kind of always denied there was an undercurrent.
Mm.
But I do think in this movie, the man she marries wants to control what she does with her time.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, very much so.
He wants her to retire from ice skating And I'm not going to do any kind of spoilers, but there is definitely some friction around that. And perhaps he might eventually pay a price for that.
Right. I also think there's some like level of projection, too, because there's like a big point of contention with Samantha seeing her therapist.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And sort of his like strange close relationship with like Samantha's best friend, too. Like he sort of like insinuates all the time that like there's nothing Samantha could be doing with her time that's like not, especially with the therapist.
Like he wants her to go shopping.
Yeah, but also like it's just like he's suspicious of her in this way where it's kind of like, why do you think she's boning her therapist all the time, man?
One point on that though is he's not really her therapist. He's her husband's friend who Beth is boning. And then she goes to have one therapy session with him. And he's a little bit sleazy.
Yeah.
But he's not sleazy during the therapy
session.
No,
he's not. Like, he's like chill.
He like splits. He's sleazy in real life, but in therapy, like,
he's like pretty chill, objective.
He puts his like therapy hat on.
Yeah, well, that's how all therapists are. That's kind of the
They're
tea.
Sleazy in real
they're
life?
They're sleazy in real life, but then they therapize.
Well, I think they're like fucked up in real life.
Yeah, well,
and then
for
they,
sure.
You know what I mean? Like, they become therapists because they're trying to figure out what their problem is, but in sessions, they're...
That's why I'm never going to therapy and no one can make me and I'm never going to do it.
Okay. Well, you don't, true to that. You obviously don't need it. You're doing great.
I know. What about sex? Is it an attack on
like sexy, liberated women?
Sexy stuff? I don't know.
No.
Here's a, I read one quote from an article and I'm going to kind of bounce around here because it got a little bit spoiler, but kind of, posited that there was some kind of association between sex, kinky or otherwise, and it was kind of like pushing this concept that, you know, this idea is kind of unfortunately a standard slasher killer motivation, which kind of downgrades this film from, you know, some of the earlier films that had maybe like a clear institutional target, and this is just kind of like, oh yeah, you like get into weird sex and then you become a killer, which is like, you know, it's early enough to be a proto slasher, but I just thought it was an interesting angle I wanted to bring to the table. I don't know if I necessarily agree with that take, but...
Well, this might be jumping topics, but I read that it bridged the gap, or was the missing link between giallo and slashers, and slasher movies seem to be... Isn't that one of the things? If you fuck, you get murdered?
Yeah.
Yeah,
typically.
So, and that is something people have always said about them is, like, women who have sex get murdered.
Right. I mean, like, maybe there is something, like, to that, but it doesn't feel like it's taking, like, a harsh, like,
stance on
women
yeah.
being promiscuous is, like, bad or equals being murdered. Like,
yeah.
Especially, like, without spoiling anything, you know, you can't really, like, dive into the specifics, but it doesn't really, like, feel
well,
that way.
Well, we can get into a little bit about her mom without, because I feel like there's some judgment around, like, her mom being maybe, like, slutty and she gets murdered.
Was that kind of, like, the consensus from people around her? Were they, like, did anyone make comments about her mom or anything?
Well, we see it through flashbacks.
We see it through flashbacks, and it seems like that's how Samantha feels it is.
Right.
Her mom's, like, fucking some guy who's not her dad.
And it does seem like also, like, at least from Samantha's perspective, her mom's kind of, like, mean.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, her mom's, like, not a very, like, caring person.
Like, she's more interested in her boyfriend than her kid. And maybe that's why she died. Or
from, like, a child's perspective, though, for sure. But it does kind of seem like that, like from the flashbacks to like her mom's not like the best person in Samantha's eyes, at least.
Yeah, but other than that, I don't really get that.
Yeah, I don't either because, you know,
I didn't feel that from it at all. It didn't
I feel
seem
like it's a weird take just because.
You don't really even see any sex in this movie.
The people that die in this movie didn't die
right after
having sex or because they had sex. So like,
yeah.
I mean, I think the association is that the murderer is murdering because they had seen some kind of sex thing.
Right.
And I think that's kind of a weak... I wanted to bring it up just because I thought it was like a, you know, if this movie isn't about anything, could it possibly be about something? And that was one angle that came up
I wanted
to explore, but I don't agree with it.
I think this movie was supposed to be like a shocking take on mental illness, but it was in a time where there that wasn't like a fleshed out idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
100%.
Especially considering like the lack of accuracy to like
yeah, that's what I'm mental saying.
Health illnesses yeah. too.
I think it was using that as like a jumping off point to show some like cool gore before there was a vehicle for that. And it, I don't know, that's my personal take, is that I don't, there were some points where there was some like kind of anti-capitalist stuff, which I appreciated.
Yeah, that was the last thing that I kind of noted, was there was an interesting kind of balance between sort of these upper class people.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get to see kind of the grimy life of people that haven't had it so good. And
mm-hmm.
it's apparently a tough time in England when this movie came out. A lot of people were struggling financially.
70s, yeah.
So you kind of get to see this weird balance. And I don't think they really play it up, but that is, it is there.
There are comments about it, though.
Yeah. I don't know if it's necessarily a particular target of the filmmaker or this storyline.
Doesn't at least feel that way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyways, that's a little bit about Pete Walker and his motivations in filmmaking. Let's talk about someone else in this movie, Lynn Frederick,
yeah.
who plays Samantha.
Babe alert.
Yeah, she was known as somewhat of a scream queen based on her work on a film called Vampire Circus. And
she's in that movie.
You know that? I don't yes. know that one. Huh. And then, of course, this film, which is kind of a limited filmography for a scream queen, but I did read somewhere that she was in the film Phase 4, which is that weird ant movie, which we watched.
Oh, that was good.
Which I think was actually cool. I kind of forgot about that and that she was in it. But
yeah.
Not a lot of horror credits, but she was kind of known as a scream queen. And apparently, she had known Pete Walker since they were 14 years old because their moms were friends and co-workers. Cute. But weren't really friends, and they didn't really work on anything until this movie. So it's not like they had some close connection. They just happened to know each other through moms. And here's the interesting thing. She was married to Peter Sellers at the age of 22. And his death haunted her for the rest of her life. In fact, she even had a shrine to him in her house, which had a negative impact on her next two marriages.
I'm sure.
But she was also maligned by the public and media and called a gold digger after Peter Sellers named her the primary beneficiary of her will.
He had to be at least, he didn't die super old, but he had to be at least in his 50s or 60s.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But she was ultimately blacklisted by Hollywood and unfortunately died in 1994 at the age of 39. So she really had a rough go
what?
Of it.
She's yeah. dead?
She is.
She died at 39?
Yeah.
That's so messed up.
No discernible cause of death. But yeah. Where?
Alcohol use disorder is what it says.
Awesome.
Well, I mean, Peter Sellers was 55 and she was 22, which that's not, you know, 54.
Yeah, everybody does that these days. But yeah, so she had a kind of rough time of it, but yeah. that's just a little bit of her backstory because I thought she was an interesting character, has a little bit of horror background. What did you think of her performance? She kind of had to carry this. It was kind of her, she was kind of the lead thing here.
I feel like she did, like, out of everybody, like, probably the best, I would say, like, objectively, like, I wasn't upset with her performance at any point. Like, I wasn't like, oh, this lady's bad. You know what I mean? I kind of was more just like, why is this movie 2 hours long?
Oh, we felt that?
We can get into that later, maybe in thoughts and feelings. But, like, I feel like she did pretty good. She had, like, a good scream queen energy for sure. Like, she played her role. You know what I mean? She screamed. She scrumped.
She scrumped?
A lot.
She was convincing. Yeah, I thought all the acting in this movie was actually pretty damn good.
Yeah, I didn't have a problem with, like, yeah. anyone, like, at all, really, in the movie.
I agree with that.
Which is something I also, sorry, I didn't read it today because I was trapped in the house. I read that this, it was in that same article about how, like, in this era, filmmaking in England was at such a low that you could expect high-quality actors to just, like,
just do
whatever.
Take it, yeah. you know? No, there was a really funny, oh yeah, the British film industry was pretty much dying on its arse at the time.
I thought.
So great actors would get down and dirty. That's from that same We Belong Dead article.
Yeah.
So the acting is much of much higher caliber than you'd expect because people were just desperate, I think. I thought she was totally passable, totally good.
Yeah. Here's an interesting note. I think you noticed some clothing articles in this film. Apparently, due to the film's low budget, many of Frederick's clothes came from her own personal wardrobe. And she had already worn a lot of these in a previous film a year earlier called A Long Return.
So. Oh, I was just talking about how, like, what was probably a real leather jacket looked like a cheap leather jacket that you could buy at, like, H&M or some bullshit.
All the bell bottoms. I was just focusing on, yeah, like, everyone had, like, bell bottom pants on.
At the, like, spiritualist meeting, all the heads. It's raining, so everyone just has a scarf on their head. Yeah. And I'm like, can we bring that back? It's raining. I'm just going to wear a scarf.
Yes, just do it. Just bring it back.
I'm bringing it back.
Hell yeah.
And that'll age me. Unlike your wig, that'll advance my age 20 years.
Look, you can borrow the wig if you need to.
Yeah, and then put the scarf over it.
Scarf over the wig.
And it'll neutralize the effect.
Exactly.
Yeah. Brilliant.
Perfect. Okay, so I've seen several writers refer to this film as Hitchcockian. But the extent of that seems limited to the fact that this is apparently Pete Walker's answer to Psycho. That's according to the Blu-ray description, which also calls it an erotic thriller that used pop psychology as a springboard for shocking acts of violence, maybe neither here nor there. But did this feel like a Hitchcock film to you in any way? And more specifically, did it feel like derivative of or influenced by Psycho from your perspective?
No.
Yeah, if that hadn't been mentioned as like a thing that they were trying to emulate, I wouldn't have ever guessed that. Like, looking back after like that was said, I mean the only thing I thought of was there's like one distinct shower scene, but it's kind of like all shower scenes are sort of like synonymous with that in a
it's
way
the
too
twist that they're so. Talking
I would say
about
too. Yeah, like
it's the twist, but I think maybe we've seen so many things in the intervening years that do that, that I just didn't even.
Yeah, because I mean, that's probably like, that's a good point too. Like the twist being like, it's intended to be super shocking or at least like super like out there.
Right.
Where that is sort of reminiscent, I feel like, of like Alfred Hitchcock's like, oh my God, you never would have thought like this was the real thing this whole time. Crazy.
Yeah, I didn't get that at all.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised by how often it came up, but I thought as a fun little game, we could go through this list for a brief moment of characteristics of films that are often considered Hitchcockian, which is, you know, this isn't Hitchcock films per se, but things that people perceive to have been picked up from Hitchcock films. Number one on the list, a climactic plot twist. Oh, okay. Yes, maybe. Thing. The cool platinum blonde.
Platinum blonde.
We had Beth, but she's not platinum. That was a dirty blonde.
The presence of a domineering mother in someone's life. Nah, I don't think we had that.
Do you have that? Oh, there is a mother. There are mother issues.
There are mother issues.
And
so
maybe that's, you know, mommy issues.
There could be mommy issues. An innocent person accused.
Okay. Hmm. Maybe. We don't know.
Yeah, we don't know. We're not going to give away too many things about the possible twists here. Restricting the action to a single setting to increase tension? I don't think so. There's a lot of settings in this movie.
Yeah.
Characters who switch sides and or who cannot be trusted.
Mm-hmm. A little bit. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for
maybe.
Sure.
There's some weird, like, that's the thing about the side characters, the, like, dynamics of, like, multiple relationships.
Bumbling or incompetent authority figures, particularly police officers.
Yes.
That's real life.
Yeah,
but
that's just documentary. You know, yes, definitely. Remember the whole Peeping Tom thing?
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything else we need to know. Well, I'm very sorry about all this.
Oh, you'd be sorry about, sir. I'm very glad your wife called us. This is the sixth or seventh report we've had of a Peeping Tom in this area.
Yes, but there's more to it than that, isn't there? I mean, Sam was going on about blood or something, wasn't she? I didn't understand.
Yes, well, it affects people in different ways.
Sorry?
Under stress, they imagine things. I shouldn't worry. We'll see ourselves out.
Mistaken identity? Maybe. The use of a staircase as a motif for impending danger or suspense. I think we got that
one. We did see a lot of staircase shots, yeah.
Let's see. No train scenes, no bus scenes.
Yeah, he rides on a train to get there.
Oh, he does ride on a train. Yeah, good point. The color red provoking a fearful and potentially self-destructive reaction. I don't know.
Mm-mm.
Beautiful woman needlessly embezzling her employer's money. No. Voyeurism and surveillance. Yeah, maybe a little bit of that.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I guess I could see it, but I mean, those are like, to me, those are kind of standard characteristics to any sort of thriller, suspense horror thriller, movie, suspense yeah. movie. Yes. I don't know. I just thought that was kind of an interesting angle that I saw come up a lot, and I wanted to dig into it a little bit. But as you mentioned, also, this kind of straddles the giallo line a bit. And I saw a little note on a blog called Nessun Timore, I believe that's how you say it, that schizo splashes around in the conventions of the just past its peak giallo subgenre, resulting in the film's easy classification as a post-psycho, post-Italian, pre-teenage mayhem, prim and proper English proto-slasher.
I like it.
Which I thought was a kind of a good way to put it, actually, mm-hmm. because it does kind of like, it uses some bits and pieces from those, but it isn't full-on like 80s American slasher yet. So yeah, potentially a hint of Hitchcock via Psycho, potentially a hint of giallo. Let's open it up a little bit just to the storyline and whether it's effective or not and the mystery. And let's see if we can talk about the twist without spoilers.
That's hard.
I don't know.
I think the way to get to that is just talking about red fucking herrings.
Yeah.
Which is something I enjoy.
Maybe okay. diagnosis.
Let's get into it.
In this movie, it could be anyone.
That's true.
Like, we have our guy that is pinned from the beginning as the murderer who we watch have some weird responses to things, and we hear about schizophrenia in a way that is not accurate.
At all.
And then we watch many, many characters in this film behave shadily. And there's the whole, like, speaking of giallo, there's the, like, gloves, and we see the murderer with gloves, and we see mm-hmm. other characters with gloves. And there's a big reveal that I think we can talk about in terms of the main character, Samantha, admitting that she saw her mother murdered. So I thought that stuff was pretty fun. Kind of being, you know, like I thought I was getting set up for a pretty standard slasher where it's like, here comes the guy, watch everyone get fucking murdered.
Right.
But it was more like, but is it? Is it? Or was it somebody else? And mm-hmm. nobody really knows each other as part of the,
yeah, that's a the good setup. Point.
Yeah, that's, I don't know.
I mean, I do think, well, for one thing, I didn't realize that I had actually watched this movie at some point until the very end. And then I was like, oh my God, this movie. I've seen this movie before.
You bastard.
But the thing about it is it didn't even matter because I hadn't, like, I don't remember anything. Because
you were doing something else while you were watching it. You were on TikTok.
I wasn't on TikTok, but I did fall asleep the first time I was watching it. But I would say, yeah, like, I enjoyed the twist. And I don't know, like, necessarily for me, like, I don't want to be too harsh. I don't think, like, this was anything, like, different, you know? Like, this wasn't, like, against the grain or anything, like, where I was like, whoa, this is crazy. But I did, like, enjoy that it wasn't just, like, oh, this one particular, like, thing we all expect. Like, it's a little different. It's, right. like, diverting from that expectation. I did appreciate that. And again, like, I think also the, like, supporting cast and the main, you know, actors and actresses in it did, like, make it work. Like, it pulled through because I think, like, everyone did well in the movie.
Yeah, speaking of the supporting cast, are they all kind of sketchy and sleazy? So we got Leonard the psychiatrist clearly trying to bang Samantha, right?
And also, I mean, banging Beth, he's also married to somebody else.
Yeah.
Mm, yeah.
And there's comments about, oh, I know how you operate, as if maybe he uses his practice as like a catch-all, like a catch bra.
That's crazy, yeah, to point. Use like therapy as a way to
but
catch.
But we see that he doesn't really do it with her.
No, he just does it with Beth.
But he's trying. He's working at it.
But
I
you
think
he's... Oh, you think that's what it's leading up to?
He's making a move.
So he starts off... Yeah. I don't know if that's how he got Beth in the first place, because there's not really...
Yeah.
Her husband is a piece of shit.
Right, yeah.
Oh, he's so annoying.
Yeah, he's hella possessive,
Alan.
Like you mentioned, but like he's clearly
he's
trying
possessive.
To bang,
he's trying
Beth,
to bang
right?
Beth, too, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, the way he touches Beth, like that was going to be my opening, too, is like... Because at first I thought, like, whoa... are these guys like, I don't know why I was like, are they brother and sister? But it's like a weird relationship where they're like way too close. Did not clock that actually that's Samantha's like best friend or something. That's like, that's even more messed up.
But then it's never clear whether Beth is into it or not. Like,
I think she is.
There's moments where she's like, sleazy she's too. Not,
she's like, oh, I mean, I'm being she's funny. Boinking
a married man, you know?
Yeah, and she's like, everything she does, she's like pranking people, but it's actually kind of like power delicious. Moves.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just like all it's for true. Fun. It's like,
I'm trying to gain something.
Yeah.
That's why you prank people?
Yes, that's why I, no. Mm. But yeah, she seems to be kind of malicious.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting angle here that it could have just been a classic sort of like stalk and slash, but then there's these weird sort of relationships that distract you a bit from the classic sort of slasher narrative, and you're trying to figure out like, what's the deal with the relationship between all these people, which is an interesting element to add to something like this, I think.
They're in a polycule.
Ooh, that I don't does know
that is what it feels non-consensual, like a little bit. It's a non-consensual
on some sides
polycule of sorts.
Yeah,
those are fancy. But other
supporting cast, like the maid, is fucking fantastic.
She's great. Her and her daughter. I wish more screen time. Justice for them. More
apparently, she's quite Queenie Watts. I think is her
Queenie
name.
Queenie Watts. Yeah, I forgot to mention
Mrs.
that.
Mrs. Wallace. No, you said it when we just in brief intros, but she does a lot for the movie. Having those little brief, because she's got this like kind of raspy smoker's voice, and she just shows up and you're like,
but okay. I also like that she's like a very energetic, like sort of like bumbly person, you know?
Yeah.
She's like,
I saw one interesting note somewhere that was like, a lot of horror movies use cats and birds for jump scares. We use Queenie Watts.
Yeah, like she just shows up and is like, oh, miss, you need to dry off. You're going to catch cold in that towel. Oh, my God. The chimney sweep voice is not coming to me. She's got a cockney. She's got a strong smoker's cockney.
Yeah, well, that's a good transition into the next thing. So Miss Wallace, the character here, kind of introduces this brief supernatural element into the film, which is kind of strange for this kind of film. So I mentioned it in the recap briefly, but Miss Wallace convinces Samantha to attend a seance or meeting with this medium who also is her daughter, Joy.
Mm-hmm.
And Miss Wallace has kind of been on about this throughout the film, and it seems pretty scammy at first, but then out of nowhere, we get this whacked out moment of supernatural possession wherein Joy begins channeling one of the characters who has died and warns her that the killer is near.
In the room.
In the room. And her eyes are bulging out of her head. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's completely out of the blue, doesn't fit for how the film has been proceeding so far.
It's like Hereditary.
Yeah.
Did I die? I had so much to do. My patients needed me. Samantha wanted my help.
Give me some more details, Samantha. Make some inquiries about Haskins.
No. My killer's here. My killer's in this hall.
And I do have to say, if a movie introduces a seance or a medium or something like this, I'm always into it. Even if it's cheesy or it's cliche or it doesn't fit, I'm kind of always like, yeah, let's do it. Let's go there.
Bring out the Ouija boards.
So that was kind of the point where I feel like this movie kind of tipped me over the edge into like, okay, now I'm just in it. But how did you feel about that?
Pro seance. It was a meeting of the spiritualist psychic society, but it was like the psychic, it had like a masculine
psychic brotherhood.
Yes, which I love that. It's like Masonic.
Yeah.
Yeah, psychic brotherhood. What do you think, Bubs?
I mean, like we're all saying, like, I love a good seance. Mm-hmm. I love seances. And it was fun. Like, it was kind of like unexpected. Like, because also it's not really a plot point that's brought up at any other point in any way, shape, or form, but I did enjoy just like this sort of like, ooh, it was kind of like moody, atmospheric too. It's like dark and like thundery, and then this like poor medium's like eyes just like literally like pop out of her head.
Yeah, like Large Marge.
Very much so.
Yeah, hell
so, yeah. So, yeah, I always enjoy, like, a good atmospheric seance that will never disappoint.
I guess the, like, adding of the supernatural does fit with the... One thing we haven't touched on a lot is there's a lot of hysterical broad energy in this movie. And did she really see it or did she make it up? And then also Mrs. Wallace says there's spirit. Earlier she says, oh, you can finally see them.
Well, she's talking.
After the shower thing, she's like, the shades. So it makes you like, oh, maybe, you know, for a while you're like, oh, maybe Samantha is just a fucking hysterical broad. And then you're like, oh, maybe there's a supernatural. You know?
I thought she was just saying like...
It's another red herring.
God, I swear, like this house, there's always so haunted. Many... Well, I thought she was just being like the shapes, literally. Like her being shades, like the shapes of these things.
Shades is another word for ghosts.
Really? Okay, because I'm like, she's like saying like, I don't know, there's so many things that are shaped like people that I get scared sometimes.
I love that interpretation, but no, she says the shades in a very thick...
And she means ghosts.
Yes, shades are spirits.
I thought she meant the shades as in the curtains, which also match the wallpaper.
That matched the bedspread. Yeah. Too much paisley. Even for me, the pattern, I got to pattern overload.
Yeah. Well, one thing about this kind of random inclusion of the scene is that I saw one or two of the writers that picked up on this sort of giallo element point to this is like, yeah, this is where it kind of starts to go Italian a little bit.
Okay.
It's when you like pop
it's the
in.
The best part.
Yeah, you pop something like this into a film and then all of a sudden you're like, whoa, wait a minute.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of fun.
Well, and the daughter really does, you know, it's not just that her eyes pop out. Like, what she says is legit.
Yeah.
There is, like, some, or it's a coincidence, but and it she's does, also a schizo.
Yeah, she might be a schizo.
I don't think we're supposed to say that word.
I don't know. I could say whatever I want. This scene also loosely starts to set up maybe your first, wait a minute, what the fuck moment of the film.
Right.
So I think it's weird because it feels random, but then there's also kind of a connection to the storyline. It's an interesting way to get there, but it kind of works. Okay, there's some pretty good death scenes and gore in this. I purposefully tried to avoid saying who dies in this movie because I feel like you need to know
who might be the murderer because there's so many red hair.
Yeah, there could be anybody. Even though we have a good idea of who it is from the beginning, but we get a great throat slit. And what I like about the scene is that the killer just leaves the body in the car in the middle of traffic, which I feel like I've never seen.
That's fun. Yeah, that was a fun one that I enjoyed that.
You know, there's people honking and like somebody has to come out and discover there's like a dead body sitting in the car. Somebody gets stabbed through the head with a knitting needle. Comes out through the eye. Pretty good one.
Classic.
A good old face getting bashed in with a hammer and pushed in front of a truck.
Like a sledgehammer, too. Yeah, not just like a hammer.
It was bad.
Yeah.
Don't expect the like, part two, like, car aspect of it. That I was like, damn.
Totally random.
Glasses, broken glasses.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody falls from a balcony onto a piece of sharp machinery. We got all sorts of good
impalement,
stuff.
Impalement, yeah.
Yeah, got some impalement.
The mother's murder flashbacks are pretty fucking gruesome. I can't say murder.
There's not a super high body count, and the gore isn't, like, extreme, but it's effective enough to kind of tie together a storyline that may be a bit slow-moving, but, you know, it's there. It exists.
It's there.
So... That's what I had on my bullet points. You got anything else that we haven't touched on yet?
Oh, sound design.
Oh, yeah. Sound design.
There's this really great grocery store scene, which the seance are like my two favorite parts of the movie, where Samantha's in the grocery store and she, you know, is feeling or being pursued. And it's all these ads. And that's another, like, I feel like multiple times... In the movie, you just hear the audio of the news while things are happening. And it's very like...
Well, and I think that's like them trying to sort of replicate, like, again, like, if anything, my last note would be like just sort of horror movies representation of mental illnesses. You know
totally,
what I mean?
Totally.
Like,
oh, yeah.
It's like a cauldron of like all these different types of like things, like, you know, smashed into one thing. Like,
right. And just calling it.
It makes sense why like... you know, Samantha's experiencing these like weird sound things because, again, they're like, the whole title is implying like there's some level of paranoia occurring. There's someone who might be schizophrenic in this movie. But it's also just like pretty evident from the jump that this is just not like an accurate depiction of mental illness at all. And like, maybe that's not like the correct medium for that, but it is also funny to like title your movie
schizo,
after
which is I a think mental a illness slur.
And then also like have the mental illness that is in it be something completely different.
Right. I think it's isn't like, saying schizo like saying spaz.
Oh yeah,
too?
you can't like
it's not a well, I mean, I'm not like, asking the question, I'm saying
go schizo, or like I'm like I don't want to go schizo. Like people say that, you know, where it's more just like I think like trivializing
a real serious
where it's like, yeah, you're not gonna go schizo because you're upset about something. That's like something people like really struggle with, right?
But somebody in this movie goes schizo.
Someone does
go schizo.
But maybe that's not what they're actually going.
But the sound, like the grocery store sound and like using the radio news in the background of some pivotal scenes, and it seems like there's like crowd noise a lot, mm-hmm. that is like more people than you see. You hear this like chattering in the background, which is kind of cool. When it's like it happens at the beginning. It happens in the wedding scene, which we didn't really talk about, where the crowd noise is like way more audible than it should be. And I was curious at points whether that was like intentional or if they just didn't have a boom mic. But I think it was maybe intentional.
Yeah, it could be. The music was pretty cool.
There was a theremin, I think, at the end.
It could have been.
Yeah.
I like the score. It made me feel like I was going schizo at moments.
Yeah, the music was cool. The sound was cool and different, kind of. Yeah, I guess that's the last thing I...
Yeah, good point. I almost forgot to talk about some of the sound and the music there. So I think it was pretty effective. All right, you ready to do some business on this big boy?
Poop on it.
Yeah.
Gotta poop somewhere. The toilet's right here. Right.
I'm gonna take a break here pretty soon.
Not attached to anything, but right here.
Barf on that dick.
Oh, shit.
Let's do an obscurity rating here. We got 1,679 wow. IMDb votes. 48 IMDb critics. Seems a little high for a movie that's that low, but I think Pete Walker might be an actual guy.
It's got a little following.
Yeah. Rotten Tomatoes reviews, 0. Why are you even here? You're not helping us at all. Go fuck yourself. This is available or streaming at 4 places at the moment that I could find. And as we mentioned, you can track it down at your video store or purchase a Blu-ray at barnesandnoble.com.
Is that real?
That's the advertisement that came up when I was looking for this movie. The right. One place that you could find a Blu-ray was Barnes and Noble.
It's not a book.
It's not a book. I forget that Barnes and Noble even exists anymore.
Yeah, they used to have compact discs, though, I guess. Okay, yeah. Sorry.
That's okay. All in all, on our rating scale, this is a 6.
Okay.
Let's do a vote. You guys ready to vote?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
On my big October pick?
It's a barf on it.
Okay, on the count of 3, we're going to thumbs up or thumbs down whether we think this motherfucker is a gem or a turd. And here we go with a 3, 2, 1...
Oh, wow. I don't know if we've ever had this configuration.
This is a cool new one. I like it.
Okay, so what we had here was two ups, one down. I was an up, which I kind of cheated because I kind of picked it because I liked it going into it. And you probably guessed that from the beginning, just like you might guess the twist in this movie from the beginning.
Or you might not.
Or you might not.
You might be wrong.
Yeah. Would you like to unveil your vote?
I'm going to unfurl my thumb up. I said up.
I said down.
Yeah, I don't think that's ever happened.
I think that
happened. Like, she's been up alone, but never down alone.
I've been up alone 100%.
You've been sideways too many times. Anyway.
Hey, trying to act like you're not a sideways.
I know. Girly. I learned it by watching you, Dad.
Does anyone want to justify where they're living?
We should take the down first.
I mean, for me, I think, like, I just felt like it's not doing enough. Mm-hmm. Like, where I was like, oh my God, I love this movie. Like, for me, it's very forgettable. That's how I really feel about it. And also, it was just too long.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I remember I, like, paused the movie at one point. I went, oh my God, there's, like, I'm 50 minutes in. There's, like, 57 more minutes left.
I'm not going to say that didn't happen to me.
Yeah, I was like, no way.
I did fall asleep the first time.
And I don't want to, like, act like I hated this movie or anything, because I absolutely didn't. I think it looks really pretty. Big fan of the aesthetic of the film.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anyone acted poorly. I don't think anyone did a bad job. It just, for me, it was kind of forgettable. Like, I wasn't like, wow, this is this cool movie. I was just like, yeah, you know, everyone looks hot, cool outfits, pretty predictable plot. You know, I didn't guess the plot ending. I'm not, you know, giving credit where credit is due. I didn't guess that.
Huh.
I wasn't like, oh my God, no way. I was like, oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense, I guess. That's how I feel.
Well, I'll say that, you know, like you, I liked the way that it looked. I thought that it was well made. Looked good, but it still had a bit of grimy sleaziness to it, which I'm always into. Like, it felt like a real movie, but then also at times it felt kind of like an exploitation movie. And I think one could argue that the twist is kind of easy to predict, but it still worked for me. I thought the storyline kept me engaged the entire time. It was solid. There's a bit of a mystery. There's some moments that, you know, felt like it was straight out of some, like, grimy early to mid 70s exploitation thing, but that was just kind of like a sprinkle on top of what otherwise was sort of like a interesting slow moving thriller with enough horror elements to, like, you know, keep it together as a horror film. I love that random supernatural scene, even if it was a bit out of place. Thought there were some effective kill scenes, and, you know, I thought it had some layers to it, which I wasn't expecting. And I think maybe that's what it was for me, as I went into this being like, this is going to be like a standard sleazy set up a killer, watch him kill a bunch of people. And I wasn't expecting it to kind of have a mystery vibe to it, a hint of a giallo vibe to it. So all in all, coming out of October, this was one of the movies that was sort of a surprise for me, where I was like, wow, I didn't expect to like that as much as I did.
Yeah, I think what you said about the, like, the griminess I really liked, and the setting being different. Like, I read in multiple places it was just like taking a giallo or a slasher, but putting in, like, industrial London, which was kind of fucking cool.
Yeah.
Acting great. Some really great outfits. The flat was fucking amazing. It was long.
Yes.
I had that same experience. But it was, like, kind of, like, soap opera-y at points with some of the relationships, and I like that.
Do you love a good drama? I love multiple different... I love when people are banging each other. I love when they all are.
Yeah. It's fun. And that adds that, like, red hair. I liked the red herring thing. I just thought it was kind of fun. I thought it was fun, and it gave me more than I was expecting.
Yeah, I think that was kind of one of my main takeaways, is that I was expecting nothing, and not only did I get something... I actually got something where I was like, hey, I like that, which is above and beyond, like, just, I think this is going to suck. I guess it didn't suck, but if you think it's going to suck, for me personally, if you end up liking it, it's like playing with house money. Yeah. I did want to end this section with a little quote from that We Belong Dead article we've noted a couple times. There is nothing here that you haven't seen before, but it's never been as downbeat, as violent, nor as cynical, and you've never seen it amongst the supermarkets and community halls of a recession-battered England.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. I can latch onto that, because we're living in a recession-battered England right now. I mean,
not sorta. England.
No, but you know what I mean? I feel like there's those vibes right now in the States because of our really skilled leadership.
Right.
Yeah, we're just heading towards it, you know, like... the bleak times, which spawned punk rock, all that stuff.
Yeah. Okay, well, we've done our big one. And
yeah, we have.
Now it's time for a very quick special time.
Special time!
And for special time tonight, we just wanted to do our classic standard review of some things we liked from October. We typically do a top five, which I believe we have done tonight. And we're going to let, you know, Buggy is always off on her own track. She can obviously contribute anything she saw from October to this conversation. How do we do this? Did you do yours as like actual like number one?
No.
Yeah, I didn't do that either.
I have five floating winners and some also rans. Do you have some favorites though, too, Bubs?
I rewatched a couple of movies that I already knew I loved, but loved them more rewatching them, like Housebound.
Okay.
That's a really great, like,
I remember that
horror movie, but also just kind of like a funny, like,
New
comedy.
Zealand?
I think so, yeah. And I really, that movie is kind of like, you want to talk about a twist you didn't expect.
I don't know if I've seen that
movie. Is very
or
fun.
Have I seen it with you and I forgot?
Maybe. I don't remember.
It's a good time. Because that was kind of my vibe this October, was like, I'm trying to have a good time.
Yeah, me too.
And then I also watched this movie again called, it's called like XTE Hair Extensions. And it's this crazy movie about these like evil killer hair extensions that
I've never seen it, but I know about it.
No, but there's the other one that's like that. Oh, and the clothing one.
And Fabric, another great movie.
Fabric is
a great movie. But yeah, I loved that. I also watched the new Demon Slayer movie, which people might not say is a horror movie, but there are people killing demons and they're like 12 years old. And that's pretty horrifying to me.
The demons are 12?
Both, I would say, actually. That's what's kind of crazy. If you've got like 12-year-old ripped kids who are killing demons, then you got demons who died when they were 8 years old. But look like grown adults, and that is horrifying.
I think all 12-year-olds are demons.
Yeah. Yes, I rewatched Zerum. Great movie. It's not exactly a horror movie, but
Alien, the one that they were doing at VHS night.
Great.
Yeah.
And I also rewatched Weapons for a third time.
Third. Wow.
Fucking
I haven't seen it twice yet.
And
no, me neither.
I still really like it.
Nice. Weapons? Yeah.
It's a funny movie.
My favorite movie I've watched this year.
I watched it with my boyfriend and he went, I don't really get it. But
was it his first time?
Yeah. But also, to be fair, he was suffering from a cold. So he fell asleep.
It's a time for you. A time.
I guess I'm gonna have to rewatch it.
Yeah, we could do family screening
at this point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. You want to just go like one and one, or you want to spit out all your five, or what?
I'll spit out all my five.
Spit out all your five.
Let me spit out my five.
Spit out your five.
Here we go. In no particular order. Porno. Dead Male. The Baby. Schizo and Ebola Syndrome. I have a hell of a list of honorable mentions.
I know. I'm gonna, as well. Yeah.
But we can save those.
Okay. Porno.
Ooh.
The Feast. Ebola Syndrome. Birth. Rebirth.
Oh.
And Low Lifes.
Oh, that's interesting. That's a bit different than mine.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We had two similar, but honorable mentions all. Yeah.
See, this is where, you know, I came out of October thinking it was maybe a bit mid, and I had like a pretty easy to put together top five. But then when I started like thinking of things that could maybe be in just below the top five, I was like, oh, there's actually quite a few here. Mm-hmm. And then that got me to thinking it was actually a pretty good October list after all. So my honorable mentions were The Feast. And I will say I had a hard time leaving The Feast off of the top five. If you haven't seen The Feast, that was a great movie. Really interesting concept. Leaving DC, Low Lifes, The Nest, just because I love a good creepy crawling creature feature, Thirst, and Hide and Go Shriek. And I guess Humongous, even though it was nasty, but there was something to it, I guess.
Yeah, so Dead Male, Hide and Go Shriek, and Freewalka.
Oh, yeah.
And then The Baby made my honorable mentions, even though, and because it made me very upset. And you need to watch it, Bubby. You will actually, I think, love it very much. But that's the movie that disturbed me the most. And Hide and Go Shriek was maybe the most fun, so it was like on and off my top five.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
So that's that. If you haven't seen any of those films, go watch them. There's some fun to be had there. And the next thing I'll say is that the next movie is a Buggy pick. Do you have anything ready to go, or is it a surprise?
It's a surprise. I do have an idea, but I'm like, I'm kind of like teetering between doing it and not because I know we're all going to hate it.
Oh, then don't make me the dumper all the time. You can be the dumper.
I'm thinking about doing it. Should I just do it, guys?
Should I just do it? If you got a dumper, dump it.
I think I might do Sledgehammer from 19, I believe, 80, but it might be some
1918.
I believe it is from 1980. Sledgehammer, okay. But that's the movie that I was thinking about doing for a long time. I've already seen it, but I also watched someone do a video essay about it, and it reminded me of how fucking weird this movie is.
Like a TikTok?
Sledgehammer.
Yeah.
Yeah, is it a Peter Gabriel?
It's shit.
Okay, well, I mean, if you already know... I'm looking at a toilet right now.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we got our next movie.
Maybe.
Sledgehammer.
Woo! We haven't.
It's from 1918.
We did not overdose on October, and we will keep on trucking. Until next time, go move into that men's shelter.
I'm going to go pee in the yard.
Me too!
Wow. <Womp, womp. laughs>
Dirt dogs on a gym hunt.